Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Look, I think the best phrase is simple. It ain't working.
The Mark Reardon Show.
All of this woke world that we're living in right now is not working.
Why are you guys bullying me?
Mark Reardon.
See, presidents can't do much.
I'm done. Do what you want. Pull the plug.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, good afternoon. The first Reardon Roundtable of 2025 is about to unfold here on 97.1 FM Talk. Let's say hi to Sue Thomas, first and foremost.
Hi.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Ready for Friday?
I am.
Her.
Woohoo. Thanks, Jane.
Yeah, Jane, we have not seen you in a few weeks because of the break. How are you? Happy New Year's. Merry Christmas.
Yes, Happy New Year. It's a great new year.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is also with us in the studio this afternoon. Jeffrey, how are you?
What up? Happy New Year.
Good to see you. And then Nick Schroer. I haven't seen Nick in a while. State Senator, who is also going to hang out and join me in the 5 o'clock hour. Nick, how are you?
Wonderful. Hang on. 17 have your days mic to on there. A great new year.
Let's start with the most important story of the afternoon. No. It's not Mike Johnson becoming speaker. It's Snowmageddon, ladies and gentlemen. Is everyone prepared for Snowmageddon? So I'm seeing pictures, and we always see these from across the area, the Walmarts, the Schnucks, the Deerbergs. The people are going for the French toast items right now.
Oh,
the
bread, the milk, the eggs
are gone.
Go for the bourbon.
Thankfully, I have all of those items.
But here's my anticipation.
And then
we'll move on to Speaker Johnson. Yesterday, Sue, wasn't it at first, it was like 5 to 8 inches, right?
Yeah, it was 5 to 8. What is it now?
3 to 5. So it's going to be 1 to 2. No comments.
Oh.
You guys have dirty minds in here. I can already tell you're going with that. But by the time we get to Sunday night, yes, exactly.
It'll probably be a dust.
It was.
Nick Schroer, it came down to the wire, and a couple of folks changed their vote at the last minute. Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the House, but it was a little contentious earlier today.
Yeah, you know, it was very predictable, I think. There were going to be a couple people not voting for him, and I think guys like Chip Roy and some of the Freedom Caucus members were out there trying to get concessions. I think they're happy with the concessions that I heard that were made, especially with DOGE and getting good commitments on overturning some of the stuff from the Biden administration. But Thomas Massey was still a holdout. I think maybe one more. But I would like to see somebody more conservative, but it is what it is. When Trump came out saying that he was going to be the speaker, that he was backing him, to me, I knew it was a done deal.
Well, and Chip Roy is actually on Fox right now talking about how, and this is where the American people who voted for Donald Trump, maybe not all of them, I know the economy was a big part of the election, but look, people want government to stop spending as much money and stop confiscating as much money, which those two things tend to not work out so well, because then you have your side saying, where's the revenue, Jeff? Where is all the revenue coming from, right?
Nick, you said you want to see someone more conservative than Johnson.
Absolutely.
That guy's so conservative, he had like a pact with his kid about not watching porn together, right? Weren't they like porn buddies or anti-porn buddies?
I don't know anything about that.
I don't know anything about that either. What are you talking about?
That was from when he was first speaker. That was part of the profile about him. But anyway, look, I think Democrats would be wise to not oppose DOGE, like, and just kind of do the blanket, we don't like Elon, we don't like Vivek, so we're opposed to this. I think that would be a stupid strategy. I think most Americans sense that there are places in government that are, you know, that are a little bit bloated and that we should take a hard look at it. And, you know, typically, we've talked about this for many years, but typically when Republicans come into office, they want to spend more in the military. Democrats come into office, they want to spend more in social programs. I think Democrats should embrace this mission and say, hey, as long as we're doing this, we want to look at everything. Let's look at military spending, too. And given the changes in kind of the realignment on the right, where you have kind of some of the new right, you know, MAGA
folks, an opportunity
that are willing to take a look at defense spending for the first time among Republicans in many years, I think Democrats should take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I've always been one that is willing to take a look at defense spending. The difference there slightly is that that is a constitutional responsibility that we have. But look, there are areas that can be cut. The military-industrial complex is real. And it has been for a long time. And look, we benefit. Let's face it. St. Louis benefits from that, right?
We do.
Yeah. So, Jane.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Jeff. I think it's very difficult to be against, you know, streamlining government and making sure that they're using your tax dollars wisely. It's not difficult to go through the budget and look at these line items and say, bridge to nowhere, you know, let's do some study about the ants and freedom. I mean,
the salmon, too.
The salmon. You know, look, I'm sure that there are things out there that, you know, certain people's districts, they want them, and that's all great. But it's now you have to start defending the expenditures. And I think that is never a bad position for any politician, no matter what party, to say, you know, we got to start defending the expenditures.
Well, that was one of the things that came up during the CR. I think a lot of people were saying, wait a second, we just voted for a little bit more responsibility in government, and you're putting out a 1,500-page document, nobody's reading it, and it's got all these little nuggets in it. We don't like that.
It's called log rolling, and it's banned in Missouri, which is helpful. Is one, we have the balanced budget amendment, which forces
that's a big part of it, very helpful.
And two, the log rolling, where you add everything related to anything on any bill, and then you know nobody knows what anybody voted for or voted against.
Look, I think Democrats who fear that they're going to get flack from the left if they support streamlining government need to say to interest groups, if you look at the demographics of this country, Medicare and Social Security are both going to face deep cuts in the mid-2030s if we don't start acting on domestic discretionary spending, or if we don't take a look at the way that those programs work. And so Democrats need to stand up, you know, even to the left and say, hey, like, if you don't want things that you care about even more to be cut dramatically in a decade, then we got to start looking at everything now.
And that would be an interesting, you know, position to take, because Hakeem Jeffries was out there. One of the things he said in the immediate aftermath of the vote is, we're not going to touch Social Security and Medicare. And Trump said that also. Here's the problem. They all say that because they want to get reelected. The problem is we have a pretty big crisis that could be looming. And there might be some things we can do about it, but everyone wants to kick the can. Look, Jeff, I've been talking about some of this stuff literally for 20 years, since the first Bush administration, when it came to Social Security reform. Paul Ryan tried. He did. I don't have any confidence it'll ever get done because there's no political courage.
Well, it usually doesn't happen until it's an absolute emergency. The last time it did was in 1985. The Greenspan Commission came.
That was
and
a good year.
Basically, was that the year you were born?
I like that year,
okay.
Too.
Was it
really?
Like a kid.
Yeah.
Man,
I mean, young.
I was about to graduate from college.
I was in college, yeah.
But what they did was, you know, they looked and they did a balanced package and got a bipartisan vote to delay the retirement age from 65 back to 67 and to do it 1 month at a time. If you do these things well in advance, then you can phase them in gradually. Mm-hmm. The longer you wait, the more draconian the cuts have to be.
And somebody has to bite the bullet.
Exactly.
And you will be run out on a rail for having done it.
So, but you need to do it kind of when there's divided government. Because if one party is in control of everything, they don't want to take the hit for it. So sometimes these big reforms work better when there is divided government, as there was in a lot of the 80s.
Former State Senator Jeff Smith, current State Senator Nick Schorin, and Jane Duker are all on the panel. So we have members of Congress that are new to, to our delegation in Washington, Wesley Bell taking the oath, and also Bob Onder from your part in your neck of the woods. Nick, expectations for both of those members? I don't think that Wesley's going to be tremendously different than Cori Bush, but I'm hoping that he's going to keep the region a little bit more in mind moving forward. I don't know him at all. I don't know if you have any relationship with him, but I do know that there's hope for Wesley Bell to be not as cuckoo and crazy, right?
Yeah, he's going to be a traditional Democrat, I think. You're going to have some of the woke stuff that, you know, the right's concentrating on. I think he'll kind of be the bridge in between your traditional Democrat and the squad. I don't think he's going to be as crazy as Cori Bush, probably a lot more effective, hopefully. But Bob Onder is going to go down there. You know, he is far right. He is a good friend of mine. He is a constituent of mine. And I think he's going to resemble somewhat of an Eric Burleson. But I think he's still getting his feet under him right now. He went from a big fish in a small pond to now a very small fish in a huge swamp. So I think it's going to take some time. But yeah, expect him to be right in line with guys like Chip Roy and Eric Burleson.
And he did, you know, I checked with Bob yesterday. He did say that he was supporting Johnson. His comment to me was, look, I'm not happy with the way the CR worked out, but we have an opportunity to start on this agenda, and that's what I want to do. Thoughts on Wesley Bell, Jeff? And we're going to talk about Wesley related to all this other stuff, Jane, in a second, but Wesley and Bob Onder in Congress.
Hey, we're 14 minutes in. I haven't disagreed with anything Nick has said yet.
Makes it scary.
There's still time.
I think
it's a new year.
You know, I think Wesley will be more of a team player. You know, we had the infrastructure bill, which was like something Democrats have been trying to do for 50 years. And she was one of four Democrats that didn't support that. And that, you know, cost this region, I think, some money in that bill. Right. And so I think Bell is going to take a little more balanced approach and isn't just going to like be reflexively with the squad on things. And he specifically kind of ran against that approach to governing. And so I think he's going to be more of a consensus builder. We've already seen he got railed by the left for going into some social outings with the new congressman, you know, from St. Charles, yeah. Bob Onder.
Bob said nice things about Wesley when I had him on last time.
Why are you bashing the guy for working with the other people in Missouri? Because we want them both to bring back money and bring back what we need.
That's
what
politics is going.
Especially when Republicans are in the majority, it's like, you better be friends with them or you're not going to get much. You know?
Right. But let's segue here, Jane, into what's happening and is very confusing to me in the prosecutor's office. And what happened today? Were there two prosecutors that were sworn in? I guess it was yesterday. Or was there just one?
There was just one sworn in today. Thank goodness.
Oh, today. It was today.
Yes. Melissa. Yes, Melissa Smith got sworn in today as the first female prosecutor in St. Louis County. So good for her. She was the candidate everybody wanted. I mean, it would have been so easy for Sam Page to just say, you know, we all agree on the same person. But no, he couldn't do that. So we had to go through court. We had to do, two courts, Court Van Osteren and the courts, in order to get this done.
Ooh, and, good point.
About
that.
I mean, so this was all a big, you know, a huge expenditure of public dollars, you know, having this brawl for no purpose. And then today he sent out an email calling on all county Democrats to flood the phones of the prosecutor's office and tell Melissa Smith to carry on with the prosecution and the quo warranto. This is how he starts the administration attacking the woman before she was even sworn in.
Jeff, help me out with what in the hell Sam Page is doing with this you know, what is her name? The clerk, right?
Oh, yeah, that is
why
nonsense.
She's being charged with a felony because she manipulated allegedly paperwork that was in connection with Dennis Hancock trying to hire his stepdaughter. Now, I'm thinking about this, and I try to do this. I really do, and you know me pretty well. So if I'm thinking about a situation that is exactly the same with that kook Lisa Clancy, can I come to a determination that, yeah, that's something that should be criminal or she should be kicked off the county board? I can't. I can't rationalize that behavior. It's not like there was some, you know, manipulative and very, very evil thing that Dennis Hancock was doing. What was the crime here, and what is Sam Page doing? It makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like she did something totally awful, like lied about a postcard, you know? She shouldn't be prosecuted with
felony. Jeff, that's an excellent point as well. It is, and you were, for those people who don't know the history, but Senator Smith had that in his past, and you went to prison for it, right?
I did.
But it's a valid point, thinking about the circumstances. I mean, I think this day and age, I don't think that would have happened, would it?
Hard to tell. Who's to say? But I would love to see county government not resemble kind of what city government has at times looked like. And
it's almost worse at
and
this point.
Seeing, you know, just kind of seeing the divisiveness on the council. I was hoping, you know, I don't do New Year's resolutions, but if I did, and I don't live in the county anymore, but I would say, look, I just want everybody to
government.
To have a fresh start and to get all the pandemic money out the door, you know, that
quickly.
Has
how about work? Lines. Work do your job.
Yeah, and you know, there are some tough budget years, I think, coming, city, county, maybe at the state level, we'll see. But people are not going to have the luxury to paper over conflicts by throwing money around. People just need to figure out how to get along better.
But you know, Sam, and you know these people. So even, like I said, Lisa Clancy, the Democrats on that board thought that this was ridiculous, this move against the clerk. Everybody thought that. What's going on? What am I missing?
Person.
That's the part that I don't
understand.
I don't
know what the end game is.
That's
my question. So now you've ticked off the prosecutor before she's even taken office. I mean, she's getting ready to walk over to county government or to the county courthouse to get sworn in and finds out that there is an email that went out to all Democrats against a Democrat telling everybody to flood the prosecutor's office with phone calls.
So I think if you're Sam Page and you're coming up for re-election in 2 years, we've seen around
no longer facing the opponent in Jane Duker because she moved to the city. So that's
right.
A significant part, part of the equation. Go ahead.
But he's probably going to get a decent opponent. And, you know, the people who supported Jane have not gone away. You know, they're still out there. And
you're referring to sane people.
The sane almost 40%. Yeah.
So I think it would behoove him. I think it would be best to get off on the right foot with the prosecutor, because public safety has been rated by most people in the region as the top issue facing the region. Amen. It's not, crime doesn't just stop at the city-county line.
And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, too, because there's obviously some things that even happened here this week. Senator Jeff Smith, former Senator Jeff Smith, current Senator Nick Schor, Jane Duker, all on the panel. After we wrap up the roundtable, we have Sue's News in the next hour. Paul Hall on entertainment. Mr. Cusimano will join as well. Then Kilmeade at 5:10 this evening. He'll talk about Speaker Johnson and some of the other things happening in Washington. Jane Duker is on our panel, former State Senator Jeff Smith, and current State Senator Nick Schor. So yesterday, I guess it was, it might have been yesterday morning, I woke up to a video that was sent to me by a local television journalist, and I won't name the name right now, and it was this video that ended up getting out there that Greater St. Louis Greater Downtown St. Louis put out virally, Jane, of what we saw happened at basically, I think it was 3 in the morning outside the Wheelhouse, which is only a few blocks from here. It used to be Joe Buck's, right?
Yep.
And it was ugly, and people were getting tackled, people were laughing, then someone got shot and was killed by an off-duty cop. Have we heard, like, one word from the mayor's office about that by any chance?
No.
Like, nothing, right?
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, and, you know, these videos don't do well for the city of St. Louis. I mean, it looked like, again, we have another holiday in the city of St. Louis where there is anarchy and shooting. I mean, name a holiday in which that doesn't happen anymore. And look, if you want to blame the bar, blame the bar. I mean, they hired off-duty security because we certainly do not have enough police officers in downtown to actually properly police. So they're hiring officers from all over the state of Missouri to come. If there is a problem at that bar and 3 or 4, however many police officers that the bar hired isn't enough, well, then you have a nuisance problem. And, you know, they've been going after gas stations, whatever. I mean, if this is a dangerous place, then you need to deal with that. And you know, she just bragged about making it easier to get a bar license. And it's like, well, I'm not sure that, you know, bars, 3 o'clock bars is what's going to turn the city around. I mean, it does not look like that's a great strategy.
Well, the behavior that you see, and look, I know alcohol is involved and everything, but there's people laughing. It's not, if I want to use the word that I would like to use right now, I'll be accused of being a racist and white supremacist, but it's an abomination, and the behavior is ridiculous, and it shouldn't be accepted, and we see it all the time.
Well, they've been told for 10 years that this kind of behavior, that you're not going to be, you know,
there's no consequences.
There's no consequences for this kind of behavior.
What's the difference comparing St. Louis to Nashville, Tennessee right now? You both have, bars that you can go out 3 in the morning. If a fight breaks out in Nashville, Tennessee, I've seen it here recently. I didn't go to the bowl game, but I saw it here recently a couple months ago. Fights break out. Cops are right there.
Boom.
They separate everybody. You're back to enjoying Nashville, Tennessee. If a fight breaks out here, no cops are around. You
Correct.
Call 911. You might see a cop in half an hour, maybe an hour. And until then, somebody's getting shot.
Mm-hmm. I was there 2 weeks ago for the weekend in Nashville. The thing that blew me away the most was just that there were 5,000 people on Broadway, at midnight, all just, having fun. I mean, you never kind of had that feeling of, looking around you to see if someone...
Did you feel a police presence, though?
Yeah, there was a police presence. Yeah.
I mean, did you feel safe?
But I also felt totally safe because there were thousands of people in, a five-block area all outside. That's not even counting all the people that were inside.
Right.
You know, so it's just a completely
night and day difference.
And I hate to say this, but when I travel, and you guys are probably, we're all probably the same way, when we travel, the first thing you do is think about comparing it to St. Louis.
Yeah, of course.
I have not felt as safe in a downtown as I did in, just totally safe as I did in Nashville a couple weeks ago.
But I mean, I'm exhausted talking about it. We talk about it literally almost every week. Downtown crime, right? In the situation, and there's nothing that ever changes.
Well, they came out and said crime is down, but what they don't want to admit is that the crime downtown is up. Homicides included are up, and this is just a terrible look. How do you expect to revitalize the city when your downtown is a crime-ridden, it looks like bombed out Bosnia down here. It's Friday afternoon. I mean, you know, years ago, you'd be down here on Friday, you would see tons of people walking around. There were bars, there were restaurants. I mean, try and find a restaurant downtown right now that's open. I mean, we'd have to go blocks to do that. I mean, and so, you know, this administration, this board of aldermen, they don't care.
But remember, like the incident that just happened, first of all, I don't know all the details about it. Mm-hmm. You probably know more of the details than me, but that was apparently an off-duty officer intervening before a person with a gun used it on someone
else. In the video,
absolutely.
Right? And so instead of lamenting this incident as like, oh, this is more downtown out of control, we should be balanced here and say what happened may have stemmed, you know,
a much worse incident. But that was a cop from I forget the place in Ledington,
town of 700.
Which I don't even know where that is.
Yeah, south, like near Farmington.
Right. But I mean, so we have to the bar has to hire cops from, you know, hours away because we don't have proper policing.
Away.
Yeah, because we don't have proper policing in this town. You should be able, now, if you're a nuisance business, again, I go back to that, but if you're not, you pay taxes and you are entitled to have police presence to protect your business and allow you to run your business. That's not happening here. I mean, KSTK.
Yeah.
They're out.
Well, that was going to be my next point.
Yeah, so KMAV is left. KSTK.
Yeah, no one, you know, they own that building too.
Yes.
So, and they're leaving after 77 years.
Right. And they're moving and they haven't sold the building. And it looks like now, I just in the Business Journal, that they're going to move, I guess, near Oakland and Hampton.
Look, I mentioned that yesterday, Sue. Remember, wasn't there a TV station that was right over there at Oakland and Hampton before? Yeah. Who was there? Was it Channel 30?
Channel 2. Oakland at Hampton was Channel 2 for years.
Yeah, it's a little further down, but you know where the Highland, where those office buildings are? I think mm-hmm. that's what they're talking about.
Hey, but that AT&T building sold for, what, $3 million? We should be able to get the KSTK building for like $300,000, wouldn't you think? Nick, let's put an offer in.
I'm down. Let's go.
We can have our own studios over there.
Yeah. Man, those people really took a bath on that AT&T building, didn't they? I mean, wasn't it originally bought for like in the hundreds of millions.
Yes.
Well, and then, you know, the city's trying to take over the Railway Exchange building, and they, you know, they thought it was going to be like, I don't know, $3 or $4 million, and it's a lot more for the building now. So I don't know what's going to happen to their big grand plan that they were going to redo that, and the city was going to, you know, fix it up enough to get some kind of RFP on it. So that plan has fallen through. I mean, downtown is in trouble, and no one is admitting it. I mean, our leaders are not admitting that our downtown is in deep trouble.
Well, we finally have a leader, though, who's saying, I mean, Mike Kehoe, when I met him right after the primary, his priorities and mine mesh. And talking about the crime in St. Louis and how it impacts the entire region, if St. Louis succeeds, the state is going to boom. If St. Louis is going to continue on this path, the state is going to hurt overall.
So we are, what, 2 months away from a mayoral election? You'd never know it.
You know, Kara, you said, I think you just said the only public official that said anything about downtown.
Kara,
Kara is talking about it as well. As you know, she's going to be on the ballot. It's, you know, there's three major candidates, I'd say, Michael Butler, Kara Spencer, and the incumbent mayor. And I would bet that the two people in the runoff in kind of the finals are going to be Spencer and Tashara Jones. She talked about it, and there was a response from the mayor's office, and it was kind of along the lines of what you guys had said, which is, you know, crime is down, murders right. are down.
Oh my gosh.
Never mind what you see. Don't believe what you see, okay?
Yeah, so,
don't
you know,
your lying eyes.
You know, Kara is out there talking about beefing up police presence downtown and hiring a lot of, you know, cops more broadly, mm-hmm. with, you know, mindful of some of the numbers that Jane talks about on the air a lot about, you know, how few patrols there are many nights.
Yeah, former State Senator Jeff Smith is there. Current State Senator Nick Short and Jane Duke are all on the panel. Let's kind of shift to a couple of different cities, unfortunately. We'll go to New Orleans first, and we can talk about what happened in Vegas. Just an awful thing. And it was very, you know, for me, it was a little surreal because I've been trying to avoid the news. Wednesday morning, I was watching ESPN because I knew I wasn't going to work that day. And they start talking about what happened in New Orleans. And it's just awful. You have, you know, and it's one of the things that I thought of, Nick, maybe you can start the conversation here. We get so, this is a major terrorist attack. 14 people died, and we're almost desensitized to it because of all the mass killings and the shootings and stuff.
Yeah, it's unfortunate it happened. I think it could have been avoidable with some of the other nuances with it, but it's very weird to me when you compare what happened in New Orleans, what happened in Vegas. You got, you know, two guys that a lot of people said, hey, they were born here, they were raised here. They were on the same army base. They rented
at different times, but
they rented an electric vehicle from the same exact app. It just doesn't make sense. And I don't know what to make of it. Now you have news reporters going through. I think it was the guy in New Orleans, his house. Reporters through the house when you hear the FBI and everybody else discussing it's an ongoing investigation. We can't share these details. Something is up. I don't know what it is. But, you know, you listen to some of these podcasts like the Sean Ryan podcast. He's got these former CIA operatives on who have said, hey, 2025 is going to be the year that the Taliban and terrorists that have been implanted, that have crept through the border, they're going to start homeland attacks in the United States. I hope this isn't the start of something that we're going to see all year. I hope these are just two isolated incidents. But we don't know. I mean,
you think all those things are coincidental? Like the because it's weird, right?
It's very
weird. The coincidence. Well, whether it's a coincidence or not, Jeff, do you think it's just a coincidence? I mean, it could be. There's what 1.3 million people in the military, right? Something like that.
Yeah, I think it's just a coincidence.
I mean, it could be. I don't know. Here's what I said yesterday.
It's a site that a lot of people go to. I've rented cars from that site. I know a lot of people have rented cars from that site.
I had never heard of it.
Yeah, it's not like that esoteric of a thing to do to lease from that site. I think it's just a unfortunate and sad.
Well,
and
it might be. But here, you know, the other thing, and Sue, we were talking about this yesterday, did get some clarification. We were having a conversation. You heard references from some of the officials down there to the bollards, right? To the barriers. And I heard that they malfunction. I'm like, well, how does bollard malfunction? Okay.
Because they don't go up and down.
There was actually, I'll give a little credit here to the New York Times because they did a little good reporting on some of this last night. New Orleans first installed the metal security barriers along Bourbon Street in 2017. And they did it in reaction to what happened at Bastille Day in Nice in 2016. But those bollards, which are designed to block vehicles from crashing into buildings and pedestrians, were quickly jammed with Mardi Gras beads. So that's what the technological failure was. People were jamming Mardi Gras beads into the bollards, and that's why they weren't functioning. So then they went with this plan to try to fix them, and they are fixing them. They're trying to correct the malfunctions.
I heard that generally they were trying to fix them.
They're in the process. I guess the due date was the Super Bowl, and you had the police commissioner down there basically saying the terrorists beat us. This is some breaking news right now that Jeff Smith, I'll ask you what you think of this. The judge in Trump's New York case, Judge Merchan, says finding no legal impediment to sentencing and recognizing that presidential immunity will likely attach once defendant takes his oath of office. It is incumbent upon this court to set this matter down for January 10th. So he's gonna actually sentence him on January 10th, a week before the inauguration. Is that what we're understanding right now?
That's what the reporting is.
So what's the point of that?
I mean, you know, any sentence that is imposed obviously would not be served until after his presidency. I think it will probably not help Democrats politically because I think I think that no one should be above the law, but that's not, the American people made a decision about who they want for the next 4 years and
didn't seem to be on their minds when they voted, right? No.
You know, I think that Democrats' best posture, and this is getting a little bit far afield from what just happened, but Democrats' best posture should be, hey, where he's doing things that we like, we'll work with him.
Right.
And where he's doing things that are appalling to us, we'll oppose him. You know, and
that should be the mindset of every politician. It shouldn't just be we're going to go in and oppose everything because we don't like you or you're part of the Freedom Caucus or you're part of the Democrat Caucus. I mean, if we have areas where we can agree, absolutely. I think that's what American people want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when Mitch McConnell said basically they were never going to give a darn thing to Barack Obama. That was ridiculous then. It would be ridiculous now for Democrats to act the same way.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think people are getting, I hope, I really do hope, I think people are getting exhausted.
They are.
And I think they are sick and tired of people who cannot act like adults and these purists who decide that they get to shut everything down just for the sake of doing it. And, because they want 100% of their way when they represent one tenth of the population.
Well, I mean, that's essentially what happened today in the House. I mean, you had three
but
people that were holding everything
up. Which was good.
It almost did, but
right.
It didn't.
Right. But it didn't. And so I think people expect to not hear about that.
So my view, Mark, is that he didn't pay for the things that he should have paid for. I think that the J6 cases should have gone to trial. His legal team did an artful job, a masterful job, of delaying those things long enough to get him through the election.
Yes.
And now he's not going to ever probably, you know, have to deal with that in a court of law. But just because I believe that doesn't mean I think that they should try to sentence him on a different case, which I think were probably a little bit trumped up charges in New York. That was never the case that really I thought
that mattered.
That was really a consequential.
Well, that's where I think, Mark, to your point, I mean, were people considering this going to vote? I think yes, but it didn't have the impact like Democrats thought it was going to. I personally know a lot of people who were apolitical, and when they saw the lawfare happening, these trumped up charges, just indictment after indictment, they got pissed off and they're like, look, I'm done with this. Yeah, I don't necessarily like the guy in their minds, but they're going to vote for him against what they saw the justice system becoming.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Let me just take us quickly back to the terrorist attacks, and we didn't talk about Las Vegas. Jane, are you in the camp? Do you think that these are two completely separate incidents?
I am afraid to believe that they're just coincidental. I mean, you know, it may end up being that way, but boy,
it's weird.
We have an issue, and we have an issue within the military because our soldiers are getting radicalized, and we don't know why. And
we need to find out why.
And we need to find out why. And so I really hope that whoever steps in there, that they, in fact, start looking at these issues because we have some. I mean, look, there were mental health issues involved. At least with the
Clearly,
first guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, you know,
I think in both situations,
well,
it would
yeah,
have to be.
Anybody
I mean,
who does this.
Well,
yes.
Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
But I'm talking about, like, you know, there were issues like what? He was getting divorced. I mean, there were a lot of personal issues that were involved. And so I was sitting there going, oh, but he didn't act alone. I go, well, if he's mad about his divorce, I bet he probably was acting alone. But, you know, you just don't know. But I do think we have a problem. And if we have soldiers that are getting radicalized, and we have citizens who are getting radicalized, or college campuses are getting radicalized. I mean, we need to have a mental health check in this country.
And we have, yeah, we have a behavioral health crisis in
we
this
do.
Country. We saw it came to the surface more during the pandemic, I think, than it ever has. But a massive percentage compared to 30, 40 years ago of people, you know,
look,
it's a crisis. Significant distress.
I don't know how to handle it. I've been very honest because I've suffered from deep, deep anxiety, and it got mixed with depression about 11, 12 years ago. And I got very lucky, got put on medication. And I was at a point in my life 30 years ago. I remember hearing people that were, you know, depressed and they were taking medication. I thought it was ridiculous. And I do believe that exercise and good habits can certainly take the edge off a lot of that. In my situation, I needed the medication. I mean, I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I thought that my life was basically over. So I firmly believe, and I see this developing. Jeff, you got your daughter here today, and I have a daughter that's very similar to your daughter's age. And I'm very concerned about young people in particular. Mm-hmm. 60 Minutes did a story a couple years ago, and they were focusing on mental health for kids in particular. And they went up to Milwaukee, and you know, I was there for a long time, so it kind of spiked my interest. And they had set up sort of a clinic, like a one-day walk-in mental health clinic to try to do something different. I don't know what the answers are, but I think we have to get creative here. Right. We don't have enough professionals probably that can provide these services, but it's a crisis.
So to tie together a couple of different, you know, issues that we're talking about today, when I was in the Senate, I took 1 month and did a month of all-night ride-alongs with cops in the city, which totally kind of changed the way that I thought a lot about public safety. And my biggest takeaway after doing 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. ride-alongs for a month was that we have a behavioral health crisis in this city. The amount of pain and distress that pours out of people when they get in situations where cops
where
are called,
police are there,
you know,
yes.
it was sobering in a lot of respects.
But you know, it was supposed to be fixed. I mean, we're supposed to have social workers. They don't work overnights when, you know, people don't, you know, prevent their mental health crises at night. So, and the problem is, you can have a social worker show up, but if you don't have any follow up services, having that social worker for 20 minutes at a scene where police officers call. The bottom line is, I don't think police officers have any trouble trying to, you know, they've been trained for mental health. I think they know, but if they have nowhere to take these
that's
people,
exactly it.
It doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't change anything.
I hear from the cops
anything.
All the time.
It's like they see
I
the
wish
same
we
people.
Could.
Yeah,
you see the
same
person
people
time
over
and again.
Over
even
again.
The guys that they have to, you know, hit with Narcan time and time again. It's like they need help,
yes.
But we don't have any help to get them to.
Hang on. We got one more segment of the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday to go. Reardon Roundtable on a Friday, the first one of 2025. Jane is here, former State Senator Jeff Smith and current State Senator Nick Short. Jane, a little breaking news for us on a topic that we talked about a little earlier on the show, right?
Yes, thankfully. So the criminal case against the county clerk has been dismissed. So that's thank goodness. I mean, that, you know, normalcy has taken over again, and weaponizing our criminal justice system in St. Louis County has now been stopped.
Well, is that because Tim Fitch was on yesterday, former St. Louis County Police Chief, former councilman. He was the one who, when he left, Dennis Hancock took his position on the council, but he pretty much predicted this, that when Melissa was sworn in, that she would get rid of the charges. Is that essentially what happened?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, we all know that all the top lawyers in the office said they refused to participate in it and said, we're not doing this. And so Wesley had to sort of commandeer the grand jury for a person who was not even a prosecutor. That's a whole nother can of worms. And so the prosecutors in the office would not participate.
It's just baffling. It's a baffling situation. We hope it's taken care of.
Good for her.
Nick, the legislative session begins next week, weather permitting. What are your expectations with Mike Kehoe? We've seen dysfunction in the Missouri Senate. I don't know if you've noticed. You've been maybe a part of that a little bit in the past few years. You have higher hopes, don't you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the conversations that I've had with him, the priorities align, and, you know, we can talk about all the different nuances later, but he's one of a few that I know gets along. And very similar to me, growing up in North County. I grew up in Ferguson. He grew up in Baden. So this area, this region is very important to us and our families and staying here for the future of our kids and grandkids. But, you know, I've talked to him about kind of fixing some of these issues within the Republican Party, set the Democrats aside, and, you know, just keeping up the conversation, dealing with it like in the business world or in the sports world, deal with the drama behind closed doors. And then when it's time to perform, all of that stuff should be ironed out. He agrees with us and, you know, it's talking a big game right now, but he's actually been in the building, was very helpful on a number of issues on school choice, on the Police Officer's Bill of Rights that we passed a couple of years ago. He was very integral in getting that across the finish line. So I am very hopeful. And I know he's got good friends in both the Freedom Caucus and the regular Republican Caucus and even in the Democrat Caucus. So I think if anybody's going to get some heads knocked together and get us on the right track to cut taxes, to pass school choice, and to protect everybody's life, liberty, and property in the city of St. Louis, I think he's the guy to get it done.
Any thoughts from my fellow roundtable panelists who are on the other side of the political aisle? You like Kehoe.
I do.
I think you like him.
He's a good guy, and he wants state control, and he wants, you know, board control of the police department. He understands how vital that is. So I think this will be our
Nick,
best
is that
shot.
Something you think will happen?
I think it will. Yeah. You know, he's got friends on both sides of that issue. And yeah. Right after he won the primary, we were talking about that being a top tier issue for both of us. And we're closer now than we've ever been getting something that all the Republicans can agree to. There's still the issue of Carla May. Is she going to be in the Senate? Is she going to take an appointment? Is she going to be on an island trying to filibuster this thing all by herself? And is that going to be effective enough to kill this thing? I don't know. But I do think if it's going to get done, it's probably going to get done in the first couple months of session.
Jeff Smith, thoughts on that, and then just the new administration.
Yeah, I'd never underestimate Carla May. I think she's as loquacious as anyone in the Senate right now.
It's a good word. I like that word.
Yeah, I mean, doing 5 or 6 hours is no problem for her, you know, by herself. And so, you know, she's got energy.
So just not to lose the audience, she could filibuster and try to make sure that doesn't happen with state control.
She could lead a filibuster,
right.
And she's well-liked within her caucus. And I think there are a couple of Republicans that are not too keen on, I wouldn't say not too keen on, I'd say that don't really see how the state taking over the police force, don't really see, like, the logic behind why that makes things safer. Like, I think there's some of them who say, hey, we need to beef up the police force. We need more cops on the street. Not quite sure how that why it's any different.
Well, that's understandable because
if the city is still paying for it, you know, if the state says in exchange for assuming control, we'll fund 500 new police, then maybe that's
sweet. Well, look, Jane, it's confusing to me.
First of all, the city is already paying for 1,200 cops when they only have 800. Mm-hmm. So the city's already got the money budgeted. So they're not hiring cops because this administration, both the mayor and the Board of Aldermen, not want to. Do you understand? They are defunding the police slowly and quietly. Instead of just coming out and saying, we're going to defund it. One, they are moving money over and it's getting spent in other places. Last year, the police department gave back like $12 million. We still need cops.
Okay, you mentioned this in the budget hearing.
We need a board.
When you mentioned these in the hearings, the representatives from the city of St. Louis act like they have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
You're showing them their own budget.
Their own budget
where
document.
They're defunding the police, defunding patrol, deterring police from doing anything, and they just act like you have no idea what you're talking
that's
about.
Why we
but
need
to
new
Smith's
leadership.
Point, right, but to Jeff's point, if you do state control, that's not going to clean up everything. It's still going to leave a lot of holes in public safety.
I disagree.
And let's not be dishonest about this. We all sat here 10 years ago. And we supported local control.
Well, and I mean, it was a different time.
I understand that.
Bad politicians required different policies.
And I still think it makes the most sense because I think that if you're going to solve crimes, you need people in the community to give information mm-hmm. to cops. And one thing, just having represented most of North St. Louis years ago in the state Senate, a lot of people were skeptical because that was before local control. They were skeptical of a police force that they felt like was controlled from Jefferson City. And they, I think if you add on to that subsequently, cops are able to be hired in St. Louis City who don't live in St. Louis City. And so a lot of folks don't live here. And if you multiply the control being away from here, then you may reduce the likelihood that people cooperate with the police and give them the tips they need to solve
it's
cases.
Complicated.
So
that's
it is complicated. As far as Kehoe, Democrats are not going to do, I didn't say this during the primary because I didn't want to hurt him, but Democrats are not going to do better than Mike Kehoe, a guy who's St. Louis born and bred and cares about issues in this region.
Jeff Smith, Happy New Year. Great to see you. Nick Shore, haven't seen you in a while. You're going to hang out, though. Kill some time.
Absolutely.
Don't get shot downtown. You're going to join me in the 5 o'clock hour. Stay alive, Nick. That's your goal. Jane, you're going to hang out, right?
Yes.
We're going to have some fun. Sue's News is coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.